Hello and welcome to the Clippers Beat. It's your host, Nikki Kay, and today I have the great privilege of welcoming in Andrew Greif, and he's an esteemed journalist who covers the Clippers for the Los Angeles Times. Andrew, crazy couple of weeks for you. How you hanging in there?
It's fun. It's a good time of year. It's amazing. I'm hanging okay. I'll be curious if you talk to me again, you know, next May or June, however long this next season goes. Going to be a tiring year, but also should be a pretty fun one.
Did you participate in the face app phenomenon that was going on where everyone was aging themselves? It's like that's like how NBA beat writers feel like, right?
Exactly. I did not take part in that, but one of my friends who did download it, I was like, hey, can you just picture me? So I like sort of took part in it.
Yeah, the sly, like, hey, I just want to see what it looks like, but I don't need to go posting it.
Yes, exactly.
So tell me about the past couple of weeks. You were in Vegas for a couple of days. First of all, your reaction to the huge seismic news that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard were joining the Clippers. Did you have any inclination that was in the works?
I thought that Kawhi was still very much a possibility. Until he said something saying otherwise, I just thought that Clippers had made a pretty concerted effort all year to make themselves appealing specifically to Kawhi and his sensibilities in terms of being very basketball-focused, being very serious, not a lot of drama. That seemed to be kind of what Kawhi, as much as what we know about him, which is not that much, that seemed to be something that would appeal to him. Mm-hmm. So I always thought they would seem like a good fit. Obviously, Paul George, that caught everybody by surprise. That was really stunning. And even the next couple days in Las Vegas, talking to people at the games around the league, and they were just caught off guard too. So it was a pretty shocking 1-2 to have it go, you know, one after another in a matter of seconds that Friday night, especially that late. That was one of those moments you'll probably always remember.
Yeah, and so that was your first time at Vegas Summer League. Give me some immediate reactions or maybe fun anecdotes that you think kind of encapsulated the experience, obviously aside from the physical earthquake and the news earthquake that dropped.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to live up to, right? That first night I was there, there was Zion Williamson playing his first game, one of the most anticipated Summer League games ever, I'd have to imagine. Mm-hmm. Then there's an earthquake, and then when I'm back in my room, there's the Kawhi Paul George. So like that's really hard to live up to. I just liked how casual it was. You know, for people who haven't been there before, it's nice because you can just, you know, walk around and talk to people and catch. It's you know, nothing's very formal about it, and so I appreciated the chance to kind of catch up with people I've been meaning to catch up with for a long time in a pretty relaxed setting. You know, like just in my media seat, I'm just sitting there one game, and like LeBron sits down in front of me, Anthony Davis sits down in front of me, Jerry West is in front of me. I go back to the bathroom, and on my way back, I see Doc Rivers, and you know, it feels like a convention for the NBA.
Yeah, everyone has their guard down. It's almost like you're walking through NBA Twitter at the same time too. It's like, whoa, there's Worldwide Wob. Oh, there's Woj. Like, what is going on? You know.
Yeah, I had a really good time. Like, I think next year I'll definitely stay longer. It was, and I appreciated just how kind of it felt like a really nice chance to get some eyes on some of the young players. Obviously, not all the top rookies played, but and Zion's was cut short, but it was just, again, I feel like the NBA schedule, you know, even though there are games every few days, it was so nice in Vegas just to have, what, six games a day, seven games a day? You know, if you really wanted to, you could watch, you know, a whole draft class in about 24 hours, and I really liked that.
And you touched upon it there. I wanted to get your thoughts on what you saw from Terrence and Fee. I watched some of their games when they were Seminoles, but what do you think is going to work for them and maybe might be a little bit of a hindrance on the other end of the spectrum as potential young Clippers?
I think that Terrence was impressive with his point guard ability. I don't think that's necessarily a natural position for him, or at least something he's played a lot.
Yeah, because he's played a lot of two, right? And off the ball.
Right. And I think he probably still very much will be an off-the-ball player for the Clippers, but when he was given the chance to run point or in transition when he had the ball in his hand, I was really impressed. The Clippers were really impressed. I just thought that was a nice impression to make, because obviously with the trade of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to Oklahoma City, the Clippers don't really have that prototypical playmaking point guard on their roster right now. They have lots of guys who can handle the ball, but they don't really have that one guy who's excellent about kind of initiating the offense and getting the ball out of their hands and making others better. And so I'll be curious if he can get any kind of run in that role this upcoming season. But what I guess what I took away about him was that, you know, at least against that competition, which is not NBA competition like we're going to see it in the middle of next season or the playoffs, obviously, but he was capable. He could handle it. And so I think that was a really positive thing. With him, he has to work on his shooting. That's always been his kind of Achilles heel. Yeah. So we'll see if he can basically make defenses stay honest. And then with Fee, I think I was going in really intrigued to see how he'd shoot the ball. That was he was really good at shooting the three in college, but it's a shorter three-point line. But he looks really polished in that regard in Vegas. And I think that how he plays defensively, because of, like, how, you know, how long the NBA season is and how physical and how much older his competition will be, I think that's what I'll be watching for in terms of improvement. You know, how physical can he be? How much of a deterrent can he be defensively?
Absolutely. And what I do like about these two picks by the Clippers especially is that they just seem to fall right in line with the franchise's identity of being blue-collar, gritty, tough athletes, and mentally adept as well, because that's the takeaway I got, especially on the defensive end of the floor after watching them in the in March Madness. But it just seems like a great pickup once again by the Clippers front office. So I'm really excited for them to be part of this franchise's DNA.
Yeah, that's definitely something they're prioritizing. I think we've seen that now with the guys they had on the roster last season. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard, that's kind of built to facilitate, to absorb his kind of talent level, I think, to reflect his talent level and his disposition. But you're seeing with the guys they draft, too. I know Florida State, in a lot of ways, Leonard Hamilton's program has been called pretty similar to Doc Rivers in terms of what he demands from his players. I even talked with Leonard myself about that. And so I think that the Clippers see FSU as a good little microcosm of what they're trying to do. Because if you don't play defense there, you don't play for Hamilton. You know, if you're not tough, you don't play. And so those two things are probably at the top of the list for all the Clippers for their draft wants. And so they know they have at least those two things from these guys.
Anything that you got? I know it wasn't a long, extended coverage of the team while you were there, but any personal anecdotes from covering those young bucks that might give us glimpses into their personality as men off the court?
You know, Fee is, I've only really been around him three times, but he's just a pretty, I don't know if bubbly is the right word, but very energetic, effusive personality.
His eyes light up, huh? He's very engaging.
They really, I mean, they honestly do. Like, you can tell when he gets excited about answers. I think so. Like, that was one takeaway, and I'd heard that even on draft night that he was like that. You know, I had someone tell me, "You're gonna love him. He's a great interview," and it turns out that's true. And then with Terrence, he's really reserved, but I think there are certain things that you can tell. Make him a really good fit. I mean, he's a coach's son. His mother was a coach most recently at Rhode Island. So he's literally grown up around basketball. And I just think you see, at least conversations with people at the Clippers, you see people kind of remark about his intelligence and his instincts with the basketball. And I think that comes with literally growing up around the game.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing that struck me, too, about the two of them was that they were very, very emotionally invested, as they should have been, in their college team. And when their season came to an end in the Sweet 16, it showed. It visibly was, you know, took a toll on their emotions in the locker room afterward. And I love the expressiveness of that. I love the investment that shows from guys. So excited to have them on board. Now, I know we've done a good job talking about Vegas fits and what we saw from the young guys, but shifting to the future for this current Clippers roster, What do you see the team doing with their last two roster spots that are open currently?
You know, I think obviously there's a I think decision we made about how much value there is to adding that kind of that point guard, prototypical point guard ball handler.
Yeah.
If they really will need one come playoff time, or if the collection of guys they have who are capable, if that actually works better. So I think that's something you have to wonder about. There's been a lot of chatter about Andre Iguodala and, you know, the Clippers being interested in him, and they are interested in him. But, you know, I'll just be curious if the asking price eventually for Memphis is too high.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that they honestly have one of the deepest teams already in the league. They basically added, you know, two top six, top seven, however you want to rate Paul George and Kawhi Leonard players into a team that essentially won 48 games and pushed Golden State in the first round of the playoffs. So they already are very deep. So I don't necessarily know at the outset that they really need to make any rash decisions about kind of filling out the roster.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they've got the time and flexibility to be a little bit more patient in their decision making. And I do see that issue with Andre Iguodala, because it sounds like there's going to be a couple of playoff contending teams that are looking to snag him up, and Memphis might be able to leverage them against each other. Do you see where do you see the biggest potential with the on the court fit with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard? How do you see Doc using staggering? How do you see the rotations maybe flexing out in the first couple of months here?
It's a really good question, because I don't even know necessarily how available Paul George will be in particular the first few months. You know, he's had shoulder surgery on both shoulders, but I know what you mean. Long term, you know, that's going to be the fascinating thing. I think the playoffs, you would see them play together, I think, a lot, at least in crunch time moments. But short of that, you know, staggering them, I don't think is a bad decision, because, again, you have a lot of depth around them. If you can play them both the first, you know, most of the first quarter or first 9 minutes of the quarter or something like that, and then from there stagger them, so you have, you know, Paul George with Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. I mean, obviously, the second unit, I think, could always use some defensive help. And so if you can add one of those long star defenders to that unit, even for stretches here in the second or third quarters, I think that's obviously an ideal fit. You already have the offense right there. So there are so many combinations possible that I think I would just be really curious to see how they go about experimenting, whether they try to lock in on one rotation and just kind of ride that, or if they use, because they know they're going to be a very good team and a playoff team, if they kind of use the regular season as somewhat of an incubator to kind of, or a lab to really test things out. That's what the Raptors did all last year when Kawhi was going through his kind of restricted schedule with load management. They really, really, really tinkered with their roster and their lineup and basically tried guys everywhere to see what worked. And maybe that's a function because the Raptors coach was a first-year NBA head coach who just wanted to get a feel for how he could use guys in the long run. Doc being much more experienced, maybe he just has in mind what he wants to do already. But it's going to be a really, really interesting year. I mean, that's the understatement of the year. But for so many reasons, I just see this team being very versatile.
Well, and I completely agree with you. I think I would probably lean more towards the tinkering than Doc's, you know, like you said, I know you put it out there, but probably I would put it as less likely, because the tinkering is when you have the luxury to be able to experiment. Coaches tend to lean that way. I know Billy Donovan did that in his year one with Russell and Kevin. You know you have a playoff contending team, you're going to make it. So what are the lineups that you can find flashes with and then kind of sit on those until the postseason? And they may just use it for a couple of rotations and plays and games at a time, or sporadically. And what I've seen coaches do is once they do find something they're really keyed into and locked into is they'll hide it until the postseason, which I always love, because it's like, wait, where has this been, you know?
Right. He has the luxury of all luxuries this year. So whatever he chooses to do, very few coaches are going to be able to have the freedom to do what Doc does this year. So he's a very lucky position.
Are you more excited to see what this team can do offensively or to watch the defense? Because imagining Pat Beverly as the primary on-ball defender and then letting PG roam in the passing lanes and then, you know, just Kawhi with his size overpowering people. I mean, that's like one of the sexiest defensive thoughts you could have as an NBA fan.
Yeah, I think defensively, I just want to see how locked down it can be, because you put those three players that you mentioned out there together, it makes you really kind of almost feel bad for opposing defense potentially, just because it could be, has potential to be very nasty. So I think offensively, while there are some not issues, but just some things I'd like to see in terms of the fit, in terms of how George and Leonard will play off one another, and how they'll both kind of get theirs within the system. That's an interesting question, but defensively, I just really want to see those lineups with Beverly, Leonard, George out there. Just what that does to opposing perimeter offenses. You know, like, you know, I just think that that's going to be the strength of the team, as good as their offense can be. And I'd like to see just even in small glimpses before April, just what that exactly looks like.
It's going to be so much fun. How much concern or stock do you place in the Paul and Kawhi both being free agents again in 2021? What sort of impetus and pressure does that put on this franchise as a win now mindset?
Yeah, I mean, look, they are definitely on the clock right now. They have to show these guys that they are the destination they should be long term and not just short term. And I think that motivation is obviously financial, because after two seasons, Kawhi is going to be at 10 years of NBA service. That kind of triggers the maximum contract, 35% of the cap. So I don't sense that there was a lot of surprise from the Clippers that he chose that way, because, again, he's turned down in the past year. The Spurs had the opportunity and they didn't offer it, because obviously he seemed like he's on his way out in San Antonio, but he could have been offered a $200 million plus contract there. Obviously he was not interested in doing that. He could have stayed in Toronto for $190 million. Obviously he was not interested in doing that. He signs here for $103 million. He could have signed for a max of 140. Mm-hmm. So he has shown that the money isn't necessarily everything, but at the same time, he will want to get his. And so I think that it makes sense that in a couple of years, he may still love the Clippers, but that's the timing that makes sense for him to cash in and get the biggest contract of his career. But again, the Clippers do have a lot of work up until 2021 when he can opt out, because you want to make that first impression last. Toronto did a great job, from all accounts, of really making sure that they were on the same page with Kawhi. And I think that's going to be the challenge for the Clippers now, is just making sure that he feels very comfortable medically, and every other sense, that he's being taken care of.
From your knowledge of the franchise and their front office staff, do you see them making any additions, bolstering up the medical staff, or do you think that Kawhi choosing the Clippers is already a sign that he trusts this group as it stands?
You know, there's definitely, I think that your latter point is probably the right one, that just by choosing Clippers, he feels confident in what they can offer. I'm sure I don't have details, but I just have to think that
yeah,
it was part of the presentation, you know, how we will take care of you. But I don't really know if they're having plans to really bring in any more people necessarily, but clearly it seems as though there are... there's some confidence from his camp that the Clippers are going to proceed in a cautious way to make sure that he's, you know, in the best shape as possible in May, in June. That's what Toronto did. It worked extremely well. There's a lot of support there and trust there, and now it's up to the Clippers to kind of replicate that. And at least what's easy for them is they somewhat have a roadmap, you know, like this has been done before. And so I think Kawhi's input will be really valuable there in terms of, well, this is how we did things there, and it worked.
Absolutely. Now, Andrew, I know you've got a busy day ahead, and a couple of big press conferences are in the near future. We're just waiting on the official introduction of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, but anything else we can expect from you in the near future in terms of content you're putting out there?
You know, it's one of those times of year where I feel like I have six irons in the fire, and it's just a matter of when people will call me back. So I'm even hesitant to say what I might be writing, because it's all hinges on people calling me back. But
I know how that goes.
Right? Yeah, that's kind of the position we always find ourselves in. But I do think that next week, when Kawhi and Paul George are introduced, obviously it's going to be a really fascinating time to hear their side of the story and just why they felt this team, a team that has never really been that big draw for free agents, why they felt this was the time was right to join them, and why, especially in Kawhi's case, he felt that the Clippers were the right choice for him over teams that had, you know, championship pedigree in the Toronto Raptors and two of the best, you know, 10 players in the world, in the Lakers. So that's going to be fascinating in their own words to hear why the Clippers.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited and so intrigued. And it's cool that both Southern California guys have loyal contingents already for them back home, especially I do feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but like in today's NBA fandom, people are more and more trending towards, because of all the mobility and the nomadic nature of it, people are trending more towards fans of players than teams, which is just kind of weird to grapple. But it's cool that both of these guys have loyal fan bases back here that just kind of parlay into being Clippers fans.
And Paul George, I think years ago, he said that he grew up a Clippers fan.
Yes.
I don't really know the origin of that, but yeah, it's because of their Southern California roots. That is why. And because they chose Clippers over other LA team, Paul George didn't even take a meeting with the Lakers last year.
Mm-hmm.
That is a real big kind of bluff of wind into the sails of the Clippers, because they feel like, you know, these guys wanted to be Clippers. They were not traded here necessarily against their will. Paul George wanted to become a Clipper in that trade. You know, he wanted to join Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard wanted to be a Clipper.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't really happen for this franchise. And so that's why, because these guys have those LA roots, and it's almost like a stamp of approval from the Clippers perspective that things have been changed, that kind of that stigma around the franchise is no longer there. So it's, because of where they're from, it's really, that is, I think, an extra special part of this for the Clippers and why they were celebrating. Because again, these guys are LA guys, and now they're hoping that other people around the region will follow their lead and become Clippers fans too. At least that's the hope of the Clippers.
That's such a good point. And here's a fun fact. Did you know Paul's parents' names?
Is it Paul and Paulette?
Yeah, Paul and Paulette, and Paul from Palmdale. It's there's a whole lot of Pauls going on, but it's awesome.
yeah, there's going to be all kinds of stories like that this year.
It's going to be so fantastic. Hey, Andrew, I cannot thank you enough for your time. Before you go, though, where can people find your work, follow you, all that jazz?
Yeah, so just go to latimes.com and search for the Clippers page. That's where my stuff lives, obviously. And on Twitter, find me at Andrew Greif.
Really good work from Andrew Greif. And spell your last name, though, so when people are looking for it, because it looks different than it sounds.
This is a very crucial point. I'm glad you bring this up. It's G-R-E-I-F. G-R-E-I-F.
There we go. Not Greif, Greif. And that's fantastic. Hey, Andrew, thank you so much. Everyone go subscribe to the LA Times online or get the paper delivered to your door. My dad still gets it every day. And I love reading all the fabulous work there, Andrew. Can't thank you enough. Hopefully we'll be crossing paths with you next week at the introductory press conference of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Such exciting times. And for everyone listening, remember you can find, like, comment, subscribe to the Clippers Beat podcast wherever you get your pods at, or at clnsmedia.com.